ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Ready to grow your business? KCNR is the last locally owned and operated radio station in our area. We reach thousands of listeners in our community every single day. Our professional production team creates custom ads that grab attention and get the results for your business. And you'll be surprised on how affordable advertising with KCNR is. Our listeners are your customers. Call Sue McClain today at 530-605-4565.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
Many of these countries are endowed with amazing amount of oil and gas reserves. Mm-hmm. Under the Biden administration, they actually blocked investments into these sectors, which would allow countries to invest in their own social services needs. So lifting that up, promoting fossil fuel investment, they're going to generate the wealth that they need in order to finance their own needs.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Max Primorac. He is Senior Research Fellow in the Margaret Thatcher Center for Freedom at the Heritage Foundation here on Hillsdale's campus as part of our CCA lecture series on issues in international relations. We talk with Max today about how to think about foreign aid. Max, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Talking today about the topic of your lecture here on Hillsdale's campus, you're here as part of our CCA lecture series, how to think about U.S. foreign aid. We'll start at the start. When did the United States first get into the business of foreign aid? What was the original nature, purpose of various foreign aid programs?
Well, it started after the Second World War and in response to the Soviet threat, especially when the Soviet Union was trying to support Marxist-Leninist insurgencies throughout Africa, Latin America, and Asia. The response was to create the U.S. Agency for International Development in 1961. And what we did was respond to a lot of humanitarian organization, humanitarian disasters that occurred there, disasters such as floods, droughts, epidemics, things of that sort. It was the belief that if we could respond to these crises, that we would diminish the attraction that the Soviet model had for these countries. And it did a fairly good job. And after the Soviet Union collapsed, it helped integrate the former vassal states of the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe into Euro-Atlantic structures, particularly NATO. And today, they're very strong allies of ours. And so in that regard, it was very successful. Unfortunately, thereafter, it went south.
Let's talk about thereafter. How does it evolve, change at that point, and maybe in particular over the past decade or so?
Well, at that time in the 1990s, for those of us who remember, that was the age when we had the emergence of what was called multiculturalism. It was an attack on our Judeo-Christian ethics that began during the Clinton administration, especially with Hillary Clinton in one of these UN forums where she, for the first time, an American official declared that sexual and reproductive rights or abortions were international rights. And that broke with the global consensus at the time that our rights are come from natural law. And so that was a significant thing. With Obama came all of the climate, DEI, transgender issues. For 8 years, and you can imagine they used foreign aid as a global platform to promote these crazy ideas. And then under Joe Biden, he accelerated things and removed any possibility for even faith-based people to say no.
We hear earlier this year about some of the
problems inside U.S. aid, where some of this foreign aid is handed out. Is that a direct consequence of changing priorities inside the foreign aid program?
Under the Biden administration, it basically, the foreign aid complex was used as a global platform to push the ideas, not the other way around. And as a result, we were doing crazy things such as forcing transgender manuals on people starving. Even our humanitarian aid was infected by it. But keep in mind, we're talking about tens of billions of dollars, half of it staying at home through very high overhead charges. And this created a big blob of politically charged activists in Washington, D.C., who used it for political purposes. So here you have U.S. taxpayer supporting something that they thought was promoting American interests abroad and reflecting, you know, American generosity. In fact, it was being weaponized against him here in the United States.
You were a USAID official in the first Trump administration, correct?
Yeah, I actually ended up as the chief operating officer, the number two at USAID, after about 30 years of working with them or even being a grantee back in the 1990s.
Our colleague here at Hillsdale College, Mark Moyer, was part of USAID during that time. We've talked about his book previously here on this program. What did you see from inside USAID? How difficult was it to root out some of the activities that were occurring?
It was very hard. One of my jobs there, I served as the Vice President Mike Pence's envoy for counter-genocide programs in Iraq. And that was a time when ISIS tried to commit genocide against the Christian, the Yazidis, and others. And the first response we got from officials was, no, it's against the law. It's against the Constitution to help Christians. I asked, even if they are victims of genocide, specifically because they are Christians? And the response was yes. There was such a hostility towards Christianity and seeing Christianity as a block towards the progress revolution that they were trying to promote both at home and abroad, that there was incredible resistance. I worked with Mark, and he has laid out in his book very well just how deep and extensive was the effort to sabotage the Trump administration. We got a lot of things done, but we needed a second bite at the apple in order to continue with our reforms. But President Trump is getting his second bite at the apple, and we're seeing what's happening.
Max Primorac is with us, Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. So we talked about the USAID issues, corruption inside. Where are there areas, perhaps even now, in which there is an effective use of U.S. foreign aid?
Well, we've seen the president has dismantled USAID, and he has slashed foreign aid, and he's cut off UN agencies. And I think that's very important, because we can't make any reforms unless we change the political sociology of the industry. There are going to be things like responding to humanitarian disasters, which we have to do. There's the issue of migration, and many of these countries, your economies don't work. They're at war, and that prompts millions of people to leave. I think the President Trump's effort to be a powerful peacemaker, I think, ends these wars. I think that's important. But there's a range of reforms that we can take. First and foremost, we don't need to work with the middlemen, the UN agencies, the contractors, the Washington, D.C. based contractors, or the international NGOs that are the carriers of this corrupt ideology, and they're expensive. We can work directly with the churches, especially in Africa, because they have the hospitals, they have the schools, they have many important civic social institutions that do a lot of this work. We can work directly with them. They're half the cost, and they represent an important bulwark against any other future efforts to misuse foreign aid as a colonial and neo-Marxist effort.
Are we at all an outlier in terms of how the country, at least historically, has used and thought of foreign aid? When we look at China or Russia or other countries, how do they see their use of foreign aid?
Well, we see our national interest through the lens of a Judeo-Christian ethic. Love thy neighbor. And so the way that we defined our national interest is going to be informed by that. And so in many regards, the work that we have historically done reflects the work that churches have been doing all over the world. These charitable efforts through our missionaries, church activities, volunteers. And so there's a natural correspondence between what we do abroad and who we are as a people. That's not communist China. That's not dictatorial Russia. Their concept of national interest has nothing to do with the Judeo-Christian ethic. It's atheist. It's all about power. It's about exploitation. And if they have to kill as many people as possible, they will do that. So it's very different.
Max Primorac of the Heritage Foundation joins us. We'll talk more next about foreign aid, including a question about China. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Everyone knows that Orchard Nutrition Center has a big selection of vitamins and supplements, a fresh bakery and deli, organic groceries, and certified organic produce from Shasta County and surrounding areas. What I know is, my mom loves shopping at Orchard Nutrition Center. Her motto, you are what you eat. If you eat healthy, you'll be healthy. She says that all the time. Personally, I believe her. As a kid, I like things that are sweet. So when she comes home with farm fresh local fruit, trust me, it's sweet. Mom loves all the local veggies. And Dad, he likes meat. Orchard carries locally grown, 100% grass-fed beef. So guess what? Dad's even eating healthy, and he doesn't even know it. If you haven't been to Orchard Nutrition, you owe it to yourself and the ones you love. Just remember what my mom says. You are what you eat. If you eat healthy, you'll be healthy. It all starts at Orchard Nutrition Center in the Cypress Square Shopping Center. Open 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., 7 days a week.
This is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
Hi friends, RC here with this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Black Diamond by J.C. Newman. This exquisite tasting cigar offers 5-year aged tobaccos not found in any other cigar in the world. Made in the Dominican Republic to the highest standards of the Fuente family farms, mature notes of cedar, spice, and dark chocolate prevail. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
It's that time again for the Stillwater Powwow, October 3rd through the 5th at the Reading Rodeo Grounds with free admission for all ages. It's the return of beautiful dancers, the feel of powerful drummers, all from across the nation. Learn and experience firsthand the culture of the Native American people. Proudly brought to you by the Reading Rancheria and the Wind River Resort and Casino. The Stillwater Powwow, October 3rd through the 5th at the Reading Rodeo Grounds. For information, visit stillwaterpowwow.com. Brought to you by the Potter family, Reading Rancheria, Wind River Resort and Casino. This station and other proud sponsors.
John Cruz here with America Outdoors Radio. Be sure to tune in this weekend and catch the latest in fishing, hunting, conservation, and destinations. If you love spending time in the field or on the water or in the woods, you're going to love this show. It's America Outdoors Radio, the fastest growing outdoors radio show in the nation. Tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio.
Join me, Dr. Lauren, on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. behind the pink mic for breast cancer conversations about prevention and diagnosis, to healing stories and words from expert guests. Behind the Pink Mic is proudly sponsored by Sizzle's Kitchen and Swell Endeavor. Tune in with Dr. Lauren every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and streaming at KCNR1460.com. Behind the Pink Mic, let's talk healing, hope, and community.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Max Primorac is with us. He's on campus as part of Hillsdale's CCA Lecture Series on Issues in International Relations, talking with him about how to think about U.S. foreign aid. Max, let's talk a bit about China specifically, their efforts to leverage their aid and infrastructure projects in the developing world to sort of broaden influence. How successful has China been in those areas?
Well, keep in mind, it's not aid. Loans. I mean, what we provide is free money. Mm-hmm. We're not asking people to pay us back when we provide them emergency food, when response to their epidemics, when they need help from a variety of issues. The Chinese give loans, and loans that in many instances are not going to be paid back, and they leverage that in order to gain geostrategic advantage, such as we finance this port. You can't pay back the loan. We're going to use it as a port for the communist Chinese Navy. And so it's very different. I think initially the developing countries were very responsive to it. It was money. They needed money for infrastructure. But now they've seen the way that these loans have been exploited. Especially Africans have seen how the Chinese are rabidly racist. They see how they corrupt their officials. They don't observe any kind of international labor standards, environmental standards, and the quality of the work that they do on these mega projects is very poor. Mm-hmm. So I think their stature around the world has dropped, but it's an opportunity for the United States to change the way that we do things, and instead of relying on foreign aid, and as we know, international welfare is going to work as effectively as domestic welfare does. It's by mobilizing the billions and billions, of, if not trillions, of capital that we have available here in America and in our allies to find ways to build up these countries' economies. Welfare doesn't create wealth. Investment in increased trade does. So that's really an opportunity for us with the Trump administration. And they're actually moving in that direction.
Talking with Max Primorac, he is Senior Research Fellow at the Margaret Thatcher Center for Freedom at the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org, speaking about how to think about U.S. foreign aid. When some of the USAID programs were ended earlier this year, we heard a lot of people, some people saying, well, it doesn't cost much. We can save lives if we spend pennies a day on X or Y. And the response in some quarters was, well, are we the only country on earth who can do this? Will someone else step up and not help if it only costs pennies a day to do X, Y, or Z? So has our approach to foreign aid, our generosity, dissuaded other countries with wealth from offering their own forms of assistance in these areas?
Well, it begs the question, spending money on what and what the results have been. So it seems the more that we spend on foreign aid, the more poverty there is. That's not a successful approach. We see that in our cities, the same kind of left-wing approach to poverty reduction. But what it does do is that it dissuades governments of these developing countries from reforming themselves. Mm-hmm. In actuality, we've been financing corruption. We've been financing socialism. We've been financing bad governance. And I think the sudden cut in foreign aid that the president has done has forced these countries to get real and start looking at policies that actually create wealth instead of stealing it.
So what measure should we use to determine if our foreign aid is working, is effective? What does success look like?
I think the president and especially our Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, has laid out clear markers. When we spend foreign aid and do programs, they must be in our national interest and they must reflect our American values. And I think those are very simple. For instance, some of the largest recipients of foreign aid have been providing access to the Chinese Navy and conducting joint military exercises. There's been a lot of people saying, oh, if we don't continue doing this, China's going to win. But 19 of the top 20 members of the Belt and Road Initiative of Communist China receive U.S. aid. So it's irrelevant. And some of the biggest recipients of aid, like South Africa, have been hosting Chinese naval forces and joint military exercises that do extreme strategic harm to our global interests. So the way that we've been doing it simply is not working. We need another approach.
Is there an opportunity here to reset U.S. foreign aid in a way that can't necessarily be immediately reversed by a subsequent administration?
Now, I think this points to the issue of political sociology, as I mentioned earlier. And where do we recruit the next generations of people working in this industry? If we continue to recruit them from these elite universities that are all captured by the left, we're simply going to get more people to do the same thing. It's time to change our recruiting. We have thousands and thousands of people who have international experience in the very foreign aid areas that we're financing with their churches. We need to recruit from those places. We need to recruit from universities that actually believe in the American project, such as here at Hillsdale College. So I think it's going to be very important that we immediately focus on changing the political sociology of the industry. But at the same time, we cut out this woke middle. We defund the left. It will be very hard for them to reconstitute afterwards.
Are there two or three particular areas, countries, where you think an effective use of United States foreign aid can make a real difference and be a benefit not just to the receiving country entity, but also to America?
There are countries in Africa, for instance, Kenya. You know, I've been there. They're some of the most impressive people you'll ever meet. All of them speak multiple languages. They work so hard because the situation is very tough. And you see the Africans who come here to the United States as immigrants, they are the best performing groups in America, immigrant or not. So I think there are countries like Kenya and others that need encouragement to change the policies of their government that simply don't work. Socialism doesn't work, whether it's here or elsewhere. I think that this holding back of investment in fossil fuel investments, so many of these countries are endowed with amazing amount of oil and gas reserves. Mm-hmm. But under the Biden administration, they actually blocked investments into these sectors, which would allow countries to invest in their own social services needs. So lifting that up, promoting fossil fuel investment, they're going to generate the wealth that they need in order to finance their own needs.
Because money is flowing outward from the country, there might be some who sort of conflate this sort of aid that we're talking about with military aid that goes outside of our borders. Is there a need to have different strategies and sort of a different way of evaluating those two types of aid, those two types of money that flow out of our country?
You know, those are two different kinds of aid. And when you look at the biggest recipients, Israel comes to mind. And as we're seeing, they are at the center of a coordinated Islamist effort to destroy them. They are a bedrock of freedom and democracy in the Middle East, and they're the best ally that America has. And so continuing that support is critical. Taiwan is another country that the Communist Chinese want to take over. Should Communist China take it over, it would be a geostrategic disaster for the United States. China would control all of the major sea lanes, not only for the United States, but for Europe, where most of trade passes through.
Max Primorac is Senior Research Fellow at the Margaret Thatcher Center for Freedom at the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. His lecture here on Hillsdale's campus, How to Think About U.S.-Russian Aid. You'll be able to see that at the Freedom Library page at Hillsdale College, hillsdale.edu. Search for Freedom Library. Max, thanks so much for joining us here today on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
Up next, Christopher Heckle from Hillsdale's Biology Department joins us. We'll discuss all kinds of invasive plant species found across the country. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Refresh your garden at Turtle Bay Garden Nursery's Fall Plant Sale on Saturday, October 4th. Save 20 to 30% on native and drought-tolerant plants, all propagated on-site and ready to thrive in our climate. Turtle Bay members get early access on Saturday, October 4th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., with the sale open to the public from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 1100 Arboretum Drive at the west entrance of the gardens. Turtle Bay's Fall Plant Sale, Saturday, October 4th. Learn more at turtlebaynursery.org.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
Hi, this is Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. Have you been affected by some of the recent changes in business ownership here in Shasta and Tehama counties? These changes follow a national trend where national companies buy up locally owned small family companies and change the culture and staff and pricing of their product. That has occurred here in the North State also. Three locally owned propane companies have been purchased by large national companies. If you're like me and you prefer to deal with locally owned companies, you may be interested to know Shasta Gas Propane, which has been around for 28 years, now has the third generation working in the company. For locally owned, family operated service and care, give us a call at 530-365-3793. Thank you.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum, the host of Frontlines of Freedom, the nation's largest military news and talk radio show. We address the most pressing issues facing the security of our nation, our armed forces, our veterans, and their families. Please join us every Saturday morning from 6 to 8 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio show.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you find your audio. Find your new favorite show and be sure to subscribe via Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We're joined by Dr. Christopher Heckel. He is Associate Professor of Biology here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Heckel, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me here.
Talking today about invasive plants in the United States and a little about the damage, the consequences, maybe what we should know about them. What qualifies a plant as invasive and not just non-native to an area?
Right. So, you know, the terms kind of go together, the idea of non-native invasive, although other things could be invasive. So the idea of being invasive comes from, is that plant or is that organism, we're talking about plants today, but is that plant going to do ecological harm, economic harm, or even be a harm to human health in some way?
Mm-hmm.
So various weeds that might you find in crops for farmers that are not native to North America, those would be considered invasive. often there's a component of spread as well. The ability of that organism to kind of just take over an area through being able to spread and make more of itself really quickly compared to the natives. And it's not just being from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So there are plenty of non-native plants that have been naturalized, you know, that exist kind of, I guess, in harmony with the ecosystem that they've been inserted into and don't really cause those harms. So that's the big thing. Florida is a great example of finding non-native plants. They're, you know, that kind of subtropical area in Florida is great for growing plants. They have their state lists about 1,500 non-native naturalized plants, or just, I guess, should say non-native plants. About 150 of those are actually considered invasive, right? So there's a real big difference on whether it's invasive or, you know, can be non-native and friendly.
Yeah. We're going to talk about a number of invasive plants here, maybe what we should know, why they're harmful. It'll vary by species, I'm sure. We are going to start with Oriental bittersweet. What's the story of Oriental bittersweet and its introduction to North America?
So, you know, Oriental bittersweet was introduced. It has these beautiful fruits. And so it's one of these plants that was actually intentionally brought to North America way back in the late 1800s, I think, because for growing in gardens, it has this beautiful kind of green foliage. It's a twining vine. It's a woody vine that actually kind of just wraps itself around things. And then in the fall, it produces these really just beautiful fruits where the fruit pops open and you see this red component inside surrounded by these four, usually just bright yellow, red and yellow things. And you know, so florists still would like to put them or would use them for displays. That's the reason, it's really aesthetic, but then it escaped. And now we have it throughout really the eastern part of North America as this, where it takes hold. It's a pretty devastating vine.
Talking to Dr. Christopher Heckel about invasive plants in the United States. Garlic mustard. Why is garlic mustard such a threat to woodland ecosystems?
Garlic mustard is a threat just because of how pervasive it is. And it's really, it's really caught hold, I think, in the Midwest, especially where it's especially abundant. But it's one of those things because it gets into the forested areas, those places where people like to go on trail walks and things. So it's right kind of front and center for people who like to enjoy nature, I think. And so it's, you know, I feel like it's one of the poster children of the invasive species because it's been studied a lot as well, just because it's an herb. That's why it was brought to North America. It's actually a garlic flavored herb. So, you know, I've tried it. It's not bad if you get it at the right time of year. It's got that little garlicky flavor. But its ability to make its way into forests. So it's a pretty broad generalization, but a lot of invasives are really good at first colonizing, you know, disturbed areas, edges, we might call them, roadsides, where we find even our native weeds, right? They're really good at hitting and establishing in those places. But garlic mustard has this ability to make its way into forested systems, which we think sometimes are kind of resilient or resistant to invaders. And so that's the issue. As you go into the forest, you're expecting to see the spring wildflower display, and instead you've got this, you know, this carpet of garlic mustard.
And one of the problems is the seed of the garlic mustard stays viable for quite a long time.
Yeah. So a fairly recent study out of one of the leading groups studying garlic mustard up in Cornell have shown that those seeds in that seed bank, you know, the seeds in the soil there, can stay viable for over 10 years, which is a long time. There are seeds that do last longer, but, you know, it's a great strategy for those plants to have that ability and then just go along with the sheer amount of seeds that these things can produce. It's one of the reasons that it's hard to control.
We have a couple trees, tree of heaven and then buckthorn. And I know about buckthorn and I hate buckthorn. It's all over the yard and for a number of reasons. Terrible, terrible. Tell us about tree of heaven and particularly why we should hate buckthorn so much.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, one sounds kind of nasty, the buckthorn. The tree of heaven is another one of those purposefully introduced plants. Mm-hmm. The issue with Tree of Heaven is it's so versatile. I think it's a bigger problem in urban areas. So they produce a prolific amount of seeds, and those seeds don't need a whole lot of soil to germinate. So it'll grow out of the cracks in sidewalks or in buildings and things. And then once they start growing, they can start to break up. Those roots are strong enough, they can break up those things.
Mm-hmm.
In rural areas, we do have Tree of Heaven around here. I think it's harder for most people to kind of recognize it and or just see, oh, that's kind of out of place, because it looks pretty similar to some of our native trees.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think most people, if they're not looking real close, would take a sea tree of heaven and say, oh, that's a walnut tree, or it's a staghorn sumac, because they both have these long pinnately compound leaves on them. But the flowers are very different. Right now around here, around town, you can actually see Tree of Heaven in bloom, and it's really kind of pretty. I mean, it aptly named, I guess,
yeah.
But the problems that it can cause make it something that we just really don't want around. Buckthorn, on the other hand, is not a very attractive tree,
in
my opinion. It's definitely not a canopy sort of tree. They don't get terribly tall. The branches break easy. Its invasion was more accidental, I believe, but it spreads really rapidly because they are, again, another one of these plants that is a prolific seed producer.
Mm-hmm.
The birds will disperse their seeds, and before you know it, you have buckthorn everywhere. And one of the things with buckthorn is it's one of these invaders that is able to kind of have an effect on its habitat to kind of propagate itself. So it's really fast growing, so it's able to grow faster than some of the other trees around it, and turns out their leaves have a pretty high nitrogen content compared to other tree species around them. And so what happens is, as those leaves fall, the leaves break down faster because of the higher nitrogen. Actually attracts more pests in and more decomposers, and it kind of accelerates the nitrogen cycle in the ground, and you get higher nitrogen, which some other natives are going to be less adapted to growing in.
Yeah.
So you get these thickets, buckthorn, and it's really difficult to deal with. Well, you mean you've got to cut it down, and again, you've got to treat it with herbicide. And unfortunately, it's a big problem because it's such a good colonizing plant.
Right.
The seeds get dispersed. It's a nightmare for land managers who are trying to keep grasslands and shrubby areas intact because the birds bring those seeds in, and it's a constant battle.
Much more to come. Christopher Heckel is with us from Hillsdale's Biology Department. We'll continue our discussion of invasive plants across the country in just a moment. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
Shasta College's Harvest Fest returns to Ross Ranch on Saturday, October 18th from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. Start the evening with a student showcase, then enjoy a delicious dinner of whole roasted pigs and fresh produce grown by our students, plus local beer and wine, live music, dancing, and auctions. Every ticket helps our agriculture, natural resources, horticulture, logging, and heavy equipment students gain the hands-on experience they need to succeed. Get your tickets on Eventbrite or call 530-242-7565.
Hi, it's Mark from Haven Humane Society. Are you looking to add to your family? We have puppies, kittens, small critters, and farm animals. Each year, we have thousands of amazing animals looking for homes come into our lives, and we hope to have them join yours. Follow us on social media and find our links on our website, havenhumane.org. Watch our weekly content on YouTube, like our Mark's Monday mashup, when we talk about what's going on and introduce you to our team and adoptable animals. Get involved. Volunteer. Thank you for all your continued support. Together, we are moving closer to our ultimate goal of a North State with no more homeless pets.
That Friday feeling is more than just a day of the week. It's the sight of a full plate and the promise of more to come. It's Black Bear Diner's all-you-can-eat Friday fish fry. Get your fill of crispy, hand-breaded pollock fillets with fries, our famous hush puppies, and house-made coleslaw. Starts at 4 p.m. every Friday at Black Bear Diner. Come hungry, bring the family, and enjoy a tradition you can count on.
Black Bear Diner.
Owners, landlords, and tenants trust Authority Property Management at 2663 Victor Avenue. They manage a variety of properties, including single-family homes, apartments, condos, townhouses, multifamily properties, and commercial properties. Authority Property Management offers full-time management, including finding and screening tenants, rent collection, financial reporting, and final walkthrough home inspections when they move out. Contact Authority Property Management today at 530-410-6085 and check out their website at authoritypm.com.
Get connected to what's happening in Shasta County. Tune in to KCNR, the Shasta Live Show, your weekly dose of local business, community buzz, and dining discoveries. Join the Shasta County Chamber of Commerce, Reading Buzz, and Eat Shasta every Monday night from 6:05 to 7 p.m. Can't catch it live? No problem. Listen to the archives anytime at KCNR1460.com. KCNR and the Shasta County Chamber of Commerce, your community connection.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertrand. Be sure to follow us on X at Hillsdale Radio and the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at HC Podcasts. We continue our conversation with Christopher Heckel from Hillsdale's Biology Department about invasive species all across the country. Dr. Heckel, purple loosestrife is beautiful, as are many of these invasive species. So what makes it so dangerous?
So I think the danger in purple loosestrife is where it grows, right? It's doing similar things compared to a lot of other invasive plants, but it is known for taking over wetlands, right? And wetlands are a precious habitat. They're somewhat rare to begin with, and one of those things that we worry about when we're looking at development and things. And the importance is what those wetlands do for us, those ecosystem services. So they're great at filtering water. And part of that ability of those wetlands to do that is because of, you know, the diversity of plants using nutrients in different ways. And so when you have purple loosestrife, it's such a strong competitor. It spreads through the rhizomes. So when the stems break, they'll just make more. It's a prolific seed producer. All of a sudden you've got this monoculture, you know, stand of a swamp of pure purple. And yeah, it is beautiful. Right, but it's having detrimental effect on what that wetland can do as providing ecosystem services. Apparently the waterfowl don't like to nest in there or use it as habitat as well. So it just kind of really degenerates those wetland habitats.
Talking with Dr. Christopher Heckel from Hillsdale's Biology Department about invasive plants in the U.S. This one is a name for our neighbor above, Canada thistle. How did Canada thistle become such a widespread nuisance across the continent?
Oh, it is a nuisance too. I have this on our little homestead, and it is a bear. So I didn't really know the story about this before coming in. This is one of the probably invaders that has been here the longest. So Canada thistle, like most thistles, right, has this rosette that grows up, you know, up to 3-4 feet tall. As it's named, it's really prickly, right? It's leaves, and it produces a really pretty flower, which makes tons and tons of seeds. And so it's thought that even in the 17th century, thistle came over with French settlers into Canada. That's how it got the name Canada thistle, in some impure grains that they were planning to plant. And then the thing is that it forms such dense colonies. It just crowds out everything. And I think part of the spread, like your question of like, how did it get to be so bad? Because it is the one thing that we've talked about today as far as range, pretty much nationwide.
Yeah.
Every state in the U.S. I think has Canada thistle.
That's from Canada. We had to go overseas for the next couple of entries, including Japanese knotweed, which is destructive to natural habitats, destructive to infrastructure. What's the story with Japanese knotweed?
Japanese knotweed is one of a collective group of invaders that are knotweeds. Mm-hmm. And they all look mostly the same. So they're these perennial kind of shrubby plants. Again, really not bad looking, in my opinion. They've got these big heart-shaped leaves. They produce a big cluster of flowers out at the end of them. But they, again, in urban areas, have such a deep root system. So they have a big taproot system, so they go down and can get into people's sewer systems, break into, ruin your drain fields, those sorts of things. That's just the taproot that's going straight down. They also have a really extensive rhizome system, which is just underground. Rhizomes are modified stems that plants sprout from. These rhizomes can reach up to 65 feet, and that's where all the clones come from. And so that's how these things dominate, is bred underground, they start to sprout up, and before you know it, you've got this just dense thicket of things. And so in the urban areas, it's really just kind of about the sheer biomass and being able to break up sidewalks and roads and crack into buildings. Out in these natural areas where I see it, usually kind of along rivers is where I've seen it the most, although I have some in my backyard and it's not fun to deal with. But the issue there is along streams where these get so thick, it's actually kind of pushing the trees back.
Mm-hmm.
And by trees not being near to the streams, it's got an effect on that stream ecosystem.
Yeah.
So it's not just terrestrial, but it's having an aquatic effect.
Water temperature.
Yep. There's no shade. There's no leaf litter inputs, which are what a lot of those base of the food chain invertebrates need to feed on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, it's those cascading consequences of these things.
And then Japanese honeysuckle. Why has it been so successful at spreading across the U.S. and why should we be afraid of that one?
Japanese honeysuckle is another intentionally introduced one. It's very pretty, used for ground cover. This one I actually studied as part of my master's research, and its success comes from it, unlike some of the other honeysuckles we have. Well, we have a mixture of honeysuckles that are invasive that are both kind of shrubby and or vines, but the invasive Japanese honeysuckle really gets its power from that ability to creep and spread as a herbaceous, perennial, it's not herbaceous, but perennial vine, right? So they first tend to take hold in those disturbed areas, and then kind of like the garlic mustard will just start to vine their way into the forest and steal nutrients away from other plants, that are in the forest.
And, mm-hmm. Speaking of being everywhere, we close our tour with one of the more well-known plants on our list. There was a comic strip that was named after it for some years. I don't know if it's still around. It has a reputation as the vine that ate the South. Kudzu. So what's that all about? And is it still a problem? Is it still spreading down south?
So, yeah, kudzu. Actually, another one that I studied in my master's research. Kudzu, the vine that ate the South, is a really interesting one because it was intentionally planted for a couple of reasons. It grows so fast that it was used to prevent soil erosion. Then it kind of turned out that really wasn't working. They don't have the fine root system for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they thought, well, this would be great food for cattle or things. That didn't turn out to be so great either. The interesting thing about kudzu, before we get to, it eating the South, is it's a legume. So it's in the bean family, meaning it's a nitrogen-fixing plant. So it establishes these relationships, a mutualistic relationship with underground microorganisms that have the ability to convert nitrogen from our atmosphere into a usable form for plants. So that's nitrogen-fixing. It's called the vine that ate the South because it can grow meters over a meter a day and tens of meters in a season. And so you can see these pictures where it just like overtakes entire forests, mm-hmm. or houses that have been abandoned. My research plot in Georgia where I worked with this. It really is quite amazing because, so it's a perennial woody vine. The leaves look a lot like if you've seen a soybean, it looks a little bit like kudzu because they're related. But, you know, in the spring and winter, when that's died back, you just have this big brown, gray, dead area where all the vines are. And then the spring hits and all of a sudden, right, you can't see anything except for kudzu leaves. And I could walk through this ravine where I was working, you know, and it was waist deep in kudzu vine. And it just, so the real danger of it is it shades out everything, right? It's not doing a lot to the soil, although it is a nitrogen fixer, so it's increasing nitrogen. But just by pure force of biomass, you know, it's shading things out. It is still spreading, perhaps not at the rate that it was once thought to be spreading, but it is expanding its range in the U.S., moving westward. But the other interesting thing, or scary thing, is that now, I know this isn't a plant, but I was just learning in 2017, anyway, there's kudzu bug. So the, right, kudzu is from Asia. The bug that feeds on kudzu in Asia has somehow managed to hitch a ride over to the U.S., first discovered in Georgia, feeding on kudzu. And then the scary thing about kudzu bug, and that's always been in kind of researching using a bug to control these, you know, have it as a biocontrol, is the close relationship, not relationship, but the how closely related kudzu is to a major crop plant like soybean. And so this kudzu bug has made it to the U.S. It's like, oh, there's kudzu, but hey, there's also soybean here. And it's really causing some problems for soybean growers in the South.
Dr. Christopher Heckel is Associate Professor of Biology here at Hillsdale College as we talk today about invasive plants across the U.S. Dr. Heckel, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Oh, thanks for having me, Scott.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Max Primorac of the Heritage Foundation and Christopher Heckel from Hillsdale's Biology Department. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit simpsonu.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Fall fun is brewing in Reading. Join us for Oktoberfest at Turtle Bay's Paul Bunyan's Forest Camp, happening Saturday, October 11th from 5 to 8 p.m. Enjoy craft beer or root beer, tasty food, live music, live animal encounters, artisan booths, and more at this all-ages, family-friendly event. Children 3 and under get in for free. All proceeds benefit Turtle Bay. Oktoberfest is presented by Liquor Barn and Sasquatch Car Wash, Saturday, October 11th. Tickets are on sale now at turtlebay.org.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So, what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Looking for fun ways to explore your town? You've got to step into the Cascade Curation Store, the coolest, cleanest little thrift store and art galleria in Shasta County. We're talking vintage without the markup, prices that'll make your bank account happy, one-of-a-kind local artwork for your art collectors, and curated thrifty finds you won't discover anywhere else in town. Whether you're hunting for that perfect piece to complete your collection or just browsing for inspiration and want to explore downtown and get free parking. For us, it's not just about vibes or trends. It's about timeless quality, where every visit is a new adventure at Cascade Curations.
The property insurance crisis in California is starting to affect the business insurance property also. 200 to 300% rate increases in business property rates or not writing business insurance at all are becoming the norm. At Siskiyou Insurance, we have over 100 years experience in writing business insurance in the North State. We can help. We live here and care about our community and want to make sure.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.